Hey there, I'm Kenny.
And I'm Nell, and you're listening to
Just the Two of Us.
All right, y'all. We are here with our first guest. Everyone, give a strong welcome to my sister, Jessica.
Hello.
It's all the welcome you get.
It's not surprising coming from you two.
No welcome needed, but we took this podcast on the road this week. We traveled down to the mean streets of Ocean Pines, Maryland. So yeah, we're going to do the podcast this week. It's going to be mostly Nell and Jessica. Jesse, what do you prefer?
Butthead.
Which do you prefer? I don't think we ever had that conversation.
It really doesn't matter. I kind of get called all three things interchangeably.
Including butthead?
Yes. Actually, things probably a little bit more perverse than that as well.
But anyway, you're probably going to hear the two of them much more than you hear me, just because I feel like once this starts flowing, this is going to be a very sisterly thing and could get...
Is there a dinosaur in the house?
Could get mildly awkward. And I'm just going to awkwardly sit to the side and sip my
You might
wine.
Have to referee.
I might. I'll step it if I have to, but I'll just let you guys...
But can you tell the difference between our voices, though?
I don't know. Can you?
Well, I guess you can.
I mean, I can, but they're very close. Aside from the time that I almost smacked your backside in that...
in the Crocs outlet in Atlantic City.
in the outlet, because I couldn't tell the two of you apart from behind.
You were like, mid-swing.
Yeah, he had pulled it all the way back, and it was... Shoo, over your head.
Hey, I'm very proud of myself for being able to stop that mid-swing.
And I fully appreciate that as well. So you're saying that our asses look the same.
Well, they did. I don't know about now. Although mine kind of looks like I had two kids. So
I didn't have children then.
I'm going to do my best to avoid this conversation.
This is not a rabbit hole that we want to go down.
Yeah, we took a left turn somewhere. Let's get back on track.
I'd like to point out that we're less than 3 minutes into recording.
It's true. What does that mean?
I kind of meant that it took less than 3 minutes to go down that road.
Oh,
hole.
I see. That's not surprising.
All right, so we mentioned that we were in Ocean Pines, Maryland. This question is not on the list. What's it like living in a beach town?
It's pretty awesome. I mean, we haven't really had the full beach town experience since we moved here at the end of September during COVID. And you know, we're working and kids are being here, and you know,
yeah, about them.
But I mean, I think overall, living on the Eastern Shore, you kind of always feel like you're close to water, so it's just even closer than we were before, so you know, the accessibility
yeah,
is there.
Not like you were that far away before,
right?
In Salisbury,
I guess the beach, I'm excited for the better beach experience and shorter travel time.
Are you actually going to go to the beach?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, I did when I lived in Salisbury.
Oh, that's
and
true.
That was like 25 minutes away.
It appears as though the husband, Tim, has just pulled in the driveway, so he's going to interrupt this podcast.
I'm sure. All right.
Is he carrying cake by any means? Any chance?
Shortly before this podcast, we decided to take a mid Saturday evening trip to Marshall's, and Jesse decided that she wanted cake, and we decided to call Kenny, who was watching her son at the time while we were out. We decided to call him and ask him to make us a cake because he never says no to anything. And I was like,
she was correct.
He fought it. He was like, well,
this isn't my house.
Right.
I don't know where this stuff is. And
I
said,
what's in it?
But if you knew where these ingredients were, would you make it? He goes, well, probably.
So,
thus proving your point.
Yeah. But I don't see that Tim has a cake.
Sometimes we telepathically communicate, and sometimes he comes home without me actually having to tell him that I'm
But
you know,
tonight's
craving.
Not one of those nights.
No, unfortunately not.
No. That sucks.
So can I curse on this podcast?
I mean, unless we want to make it family friendly, but this is a
Well, I guess maybe we should keep it family friendly since it's about families.
Well, but it's about not having families.
It's about having families and then not having families.
That's true. So speaking of families, let's get to our first question. How did you feel about kids when you were growing up?
I kind of just always sort of knew that was part of the plan.
Well, okay, so we should preface this by you have two kids currently.
Yeah.
The one is...
The one.
Well, the old... the oldest
See,
one.
Just by the way you speak, you can already tell that you are childless.
Oh my gosh. Isn't that obvious?
I mean, glaringly.
So the oldest is 5.
And this is also your nephew, by the way. If you would like to express some sort of affection. Not like this is a complete stranger to you.
My blood relative is 5. The oldest blood relative.
And his, are we sharing names?
We can if you want to. They're your kids.
I think it would be appropriate.
All right.
So Jackson.
Okay. Jackson is 5. And Wyatt is going to be 2.
In June, so he's like 21 months old right now.
Why? Okay, so this question is also not on the list. Why do moms and dads refer to their kids' ages in months? Why can't you just say a year or two?
So, I guess it also depends on your audience. So I know when I'm speaking to you, I should probably just keep it, you know, pretty generic.
Because
but like,
I can't break years down.
But
into
like
months.
When I'm talking to a fellow mother, you know, if we both have little kids, like, and especially when they're under the age of 2, you frequently refer to their age in months because, I mean, a 24-month-old, which is of course 2 years, is very different from an 18-month-old, and that's only 6 months apart.
Oh,
so it's developmentally correct.
I'd also like to point out that our first podcast that has yet to be published, that's going to publish in a day, as of the time of this recording, Jesse has not heard that one yet, but we did mention our nephews in that in that episode as we were introducing ourselves basically to the world. Before this podcast comes out, the world will know Jackson and Wyatt.
Okay, thanks for clearing that up, Kenny.
So it's not like we're like those people.
Yeah. Well, that is helpful. I did not know that.
Those people, huh? Well, okay, yes. Thank you for the clarification on the month and year thing, because I really didn't understand.
But does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it does.
Because like when you go to the pediatrician's office, like that's
they
want to
know how
speak.
Many months.
Yeah, absolutely.
And because they're constantly changing, it happens so quickly that you need to break down the timeline. I get it.
Yeah, I mean, once they get over the age of 2, you stop using months.
Okay.
Because no one cares anymore.
I'd hate to be a parent and have to be like, my child is 96 months old.
Yeah.
All right. So how did you come to the decision to have kids? Like when, like how was the decision made? Like over Dairy Queen? Like, oh, let's
Possibly.
Go get some ice cream. Oh, hey, do you want to have kids? Okay, sure. Was it like that? Or was it like years in the making?
Well, I think when we were dating, we both, you know, when you get to that point when you're dating somebody and you talk about, you know, major life decisions, like what kind of things you want to do in your life. I said, I need to have cats. And then, yes, I will have children. The first thing he still is fighting me on, but the children thing is less likely so, but especially since they're here now in the flesh. But yeah, I'm assuming we had a conversation about it and we both knew we were those people that were going to embark on
cats and children.
Yeah. And then, of course, he had to get a dog a year into our marriage. So
how's that
going? I think that's important to also say where we have 3 fur children and we have a large dog, a golden retriever named Paxton. Very similarly.
Paxton Jackson.
Closely. Yeah.
I did realize this before you had Wyatt. And I thought, what name are they going to choose with an X in it? Because it's a theme.
Well, yeah.
I mean, but Jackson's middle name is Xavier. So you couldn't use that.
Right.
You could have had Max.
Ew. Well, I was going to be named Alex if I was a boy. That's what mom and dad said.
I was going to be Reed. Who names their kid Reed?
I know a Reed.
Is he nice?
Yeah. No. He's actually my ex-boyfriend's brother.
Oh, moving on. All right. Describe the moment you thought you were pregnant and the moment it was confirmed you were pregnant.
So you're saying like the first time.
Yeah. So Jackson. Describe the moment you thought you were, and then describe the moment it was real.
I take a really long time to process things. So like when Tim and I were like, we're going to try, I had to be really ready because it just takes me a long time for me to like mentally get on board with something. And then once I am, I'm fully invested. And so
the face that Tim is making, I wish that you could see it.
But then I was like, okay, so we tried and it probably only took a couple of months to try. And then I think right before it actually happened, I remember feeling really nervous, like, oh my gosh, what if this doesn't happen? How am I going to feel? And that's how I really knew I was ready because I had this like sort of like went through this thought process of like, man, I'm going to be really upset if I don't. Tim actually reminded me really quickly that he said we had come to the decision that we were going to have kids, and I stopped taking my birth control for several months before I guess I would allow the insemination process to happen.
Oh gosh. You all don't even realize what it's like having this conversation right now with my
sister.
But
I'm saying, like, that's how I guess concentrated, like, I was like, okay, I'm ready to go off birth control, but I'm not fully ready to commit that, like, the act of having children. I mean, like, I was committed to the act in itself, but not to the I guess whatever the
you better commit.
Whatever is the product of that act. I wasn't ready quite right yet. But anyways, so I have a great story about when we, so you wanted to know like what it was like when we found out.
Right.
Because we really didn't have any idea prior. I think I just was late on my period. And I was like, okay, let's go try to take a test. So we, you know, we rode down the street to Rite Aid and, you know, they have like all of these tests. They're really, some of them are really expensive and there's just so many brands out there, but
they have like bougie brands versus like,
yeah, like Clear Blue is pretty expensive. I mean, like,
oh, is that like creme de la creme of,
I think so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I think the ones that they have now, they're like digital.
What?
Yeah.
You have like an app on your phone?
Honey, I don't know that anymore, but, you know, it also depends on like how quick you want your results, how effective, I think they're all rather,
there's
somewhat effective.
Where it says pregnant, not pregnant, whether there's like a line.
Yeah. I mean, if you can't read English or if you just have trouble like looking at symbols, you know,
okay.
You can just decipher whichever one you would fit you best. But, you know, we pick one of the middle of the road ones. And I think they only have like a max of like two tests in each package, or sometimes there's only like one. So it, yeah.
Oh, wow. This is it.
Yeah. You got to break it down. Like, how much am I actually paying for these tests? But, so we go to Rite Aid, I pick mine out. We go to the cashier and we pay, we're walking out, and the cashier that rang us up is coming around the corner going into the store. And so as we're walking out, this guy is walking by and Tim says, oh man, I hope your husband doesn't find out about this,
oh,
or something like
God.
That. And I was like mortified because you're not like, that's just his nature. But still, I was just like,
I was going to say that really? Is Tim. That's Tim.
I was like, I'm hoping.
Coming from a guy standpoint, that's hilarious.
I was super embarrassed. I was like, you know, this is like my,
no.
this is the Rite Aid I frequent. So
oh,
please
no.
don't do that to me. And I was wearing my wedding ring, I believe. So, you know.
Wow.
We were both wearing rings at the time. So I'm hoping he just realized it was a joke. But anyways, I was.
So at that point, you weren't ready to commit to the product of your actions. But
oh,
you
no,
were
sorry.
Ready to commit to the product of your actions from having this affair.
No, by the time I took the test, I was ready. Obviously, because I let it happen. So
right.
So anyways, yeah, we go home, we go up to the guest bathroom on our second floor, Salisbury Home. And, you know.
Lower
pop
the
a squat
lights.
And take the test. And I think it's like 2 minutes later. I was really nervous. And we go in and we look. And
did you like fall down to the ground in tears? Oh my gosh.
Oh gosh.
I'm having
no.
a baby.
No, no. Because I mean,
I think my first thought would have been, oh, I can't drink any more wine.
I think that was like my fifth thought.
What was your first thought?
It was excitement, genuine excitement, you know.
Okay.
Because that's what we wanted. So it happened and it was kind of like just amazing. Like you're amazed that, wow, everything you've ever read in those biology books actually comes true. I mean, actually getting pregnant is a lot harder than they make it sound when you're growing up.
Well, I mean, when you're 16 and they try to teach you that it's going to happen instantly because they don't want you doing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like it's
too.
Actually... it takes a lot more time than people realize. And you have to have like the stars have to align in order for this to happen sometimes. And especially, you know, everybody has a different, you know, way that, you know, their bodies are and react to things. And it's
that's
not,
true.
It's easier for some and not easy for others. And yeah, I mean, here's the thing. You go your almost like your entire life being afraid and trying to prevent this pregnancy. And then it's like, when yeah. you finally are ready to do it, I mean, personally for me, I'm saying it's like, it's just very strange.
Mm-hmm.
Because your whole way of thought is very different.
Oh, because you have to shift.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like
I had to stop
quickly.
Being afraid.
Oh.
You know, if you think about it like that, I mean, yeah.
that's
kind
a
of...
good. That's a good way to put it. I never really thought about that, and I just never shifted my thought.
But
process.
I mean, then you have like you know how you have some people that are on like birth control and they take it religiously and they still get pregnant, and you know those things happen.
Yeah, some people are just more fertile than others. I mean, that's true. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so I feel like no one ever really describes what birth is like. Not that we need to go into extreme gory details. I mean, so we know what birth is like as far as like natural birth, C-sections, you know, the actual like gist of it. But what is going through your head when you're like pushing this baby out?
Well, I never had the opportunity to push a baby out.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
What was going through your head when they said, we need to get him out and we need to get him out surgically?
Well, let me tell you like everything leading up to that. So like I started going into labor. I was over a week past my due date. We're ready to go. Right. And so the contractions are happening. They're pretty painful. I actually went to the hospital twice and both times they turned me away because they're like, you're not there yet. You're not ready.
Oh, sorry. This is not pain.
Yeah. They're like, and every time they said something to me, they're like, you'll know the next time. And I'm like, no, I won't. Clearly I don't. I'm here the second time, like within 12 hours and you're telling me I'm not ready. I feel pretty ready, but how do I know? I've never had a child before. Right. So come on.
What are they? They're called Braxton Hicks contractions or something.
Well, that's like through... like usually hopefully in your third trimester you experience Braxton Hicks, which is really just your body preparing for it. Those are false contractions. Oh, okay. Kind of. So at this point I was having real contractions. They were painful for me, because at the time I didn't realize, but Jackson was what they called sunny side up, where his skull was actually by my spine. And I think they call that back labor pains.
Oh my gosh.
When typically when like the baby's prepared to like go through the birthing canal, their face is facing your back and then they come out. So he was sunny side up. And they told me that I wouldn't have been able to deliver him vaginally anyways like that. So I would have had a C-section no matter what. Or I don't know if they would have tried to turn him. I don't know. And that's the other question I always had. I was like, why don't you do like an ultrasound before you like get in there, you know, just let's see what's going on before we like, because I could have been pushing for a really long time and I don't know, maybe they would have figured it out. I don't know. I was in pain. I kept telling them I was in pain and they were like, I don't know. They kind of gave me the feeling like they just didn't really believe me. I was like being dramatic, whatever. So I got sent home twice. I remember just being upset because I was in too much pain to like really like do my hair nicely, because you know how important that is to me.
Well, yeah, of course.
And I was just like, I remember laying in the bed trying to watch TV and it was becoming too painful. Like you
thinking
couldn't focus on anything else.
How awful your bangs looked at the time.
I don't even know if I had bangs. Like everything was just thrown up, you know, like my hair was up. I don't know what happened. And then
that's how you know it's bad. Yeah. That's it. I would have been like, no, this is real. Somebody needs to take care of her. She didn't even do her hair.
Yeah, I know. If I had known, I would have like maybe done a blowout the day before and it would have been fine for the next day.
Right.
I remember Tim was like, go take a bath. And he's like downstairs on his phone, like watching TV while I'm like, and he would come up and check on me, of course. But it's just like, man, I have to be here and I'm doing this by myself. I wasn't by myself, but I mean, you know, physically in pain by myself.
Right.
And the bath didn't really work. And then he took a lot of naps. Because he had worked a lot that, you know, week up to this point. And I couldn't sleep because I was having contractions. I think I eventually maybe caught a cat nap in there or whatever. And then I woke up the next morning because I was in labor for almost like 36 hours.
Oh.
And that next morning I was like, I can't take this anymore. They gave you like, I don't know, it was hydrocodone or something, acetaminophen mixed with something else. And I took it and it didn't do anything, of course. I was allowed to take that and it didn't do anything. And then when I finally went to the hospital the morning of we went at nighttime. Oh gosh, I'm going to get this confused. It doesn't really matter. I don't know. I guess it was the 24th.
Well, his birthday is the 25th.
Yeah.
So.
I did spend the night. So I think maybe I went in. Yeah, I went in like late morning, early afternoon or something like that. And they were like, okay, we'll keep you. You are 3 centimeters dilated. And I was like, thank God. But I don't know if maybe they were just like, okay, she's been here at least twice in the past 24 hours. Let's just keep her. Otherwise, you know,
somebody's going to raise some hell.
Right. And I think I was supposed to have a doctor's appointment on the 25th anyway. So if I hadn't gone into labor, they were going to induce me. So yeah, I was having back labor pains. They moved me to a room and, you know, we were thinking like, we're going to have this vaginally. Like C-section never even crossed my mind as a possibility. Truthfully, ended up sleeping there. I got the epidural, which was amazing. I had fentanyl and I like it a lot.
That was the epidural, was fentanyl?
I think they just thought I was like a prissy girl and I just needed the highest level of drugs. I mean, I didn't get Dilaudid or anything like that, but
not
fentanyl
arguing
is not,
with that.
I don't know what standard of care is, but anyways, I liked whatever they gave me. And you know, you got the button so you could push it whenever you want. And I just remember being hungry also in the hospital.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that either.
Pretty sure, I think it was Tim that walked in my room with a Snickers bar. I was pretty angry about that one, of course.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Like, did he like open it in front of you and everything? Or
I don't know.
Just,
I saw
like,
the wrapper. I mean, I'm pretty sure it was in the wrapper still.
Oh,
and
wow.
I think I told him to leave.
Oh, that's mean.
Yeah. And then, you know, he slept on the cot. I don't really think I got much sleep that night either. And then I woke up the next morning, you know, it seemed like things were progressing. I'm not even sure how many centimeters I ended up dilating, but I got to a point where I stopped dilating. And that's also a common side effect of the epidural. That's something that can happen.
Oh.
Yeah. So this was like in the afternoon. They're like, oh, we're any moment now. And then finally the doctor comes in. She's like, okay, well, you haven't progressed at all or enough yet. So we're going to do an emergency C-section now. And Tim was like out with his mom getting something to eat. And I was like, they came in and had me sign
the
paper.
Snickers bar didn't do its job.
I don't know when that Snickers, I don't know where the Snickers bar came in chronologically during this whole ordeal. And I was just like, man, seriously, I was very upset. I was crying at that point because I felt like the doctor didn't really explain to me why this was happening. No one prepared me for this. I mean, I feel like you could have said like, you know, sometimes, you know, you might end up having a C-section if you don't, you know, keep dilating and progressing enough. And I was just crushed, honestly.
Oh.
Because I was like, I always, when you think you're having your first kid, you're like, I want to be that woman in the movies who's screaming and crying and yelling.
Really? That's
and,
like super important?
I mean, the crying part, no. I don't want to scream and be miserable. But I mean, I didn't want to miss out on physically giving birth to my child and feeling like I did that and pushed it out.
Okay.
Or him out.
Okay.
So I was very upset. I had to sign the paper and, you know, Tim wasn't there that in that moment, which is okay. But I mean, it was just kind of like, I was just upset. Like you also feel kind of guilty. You feel like what's wrong? Like, why couldn't I have done this?
Really?
It's not my fault. Obviously I know that, but I mean, you know, people have a stigma about C-sections where it's like you didn't do it or you took the easy way out.
But this wasn't voluntary.
Right. But that's what people say. I mean, I guess
really?
In some cases, some people elect to have a C-section for whatever reasons that they have. And even if that's what they choose to do voluntarily, more power to you. Like, I understand. But for my first kid, I wanted to have to push him out. And
I didn't
know
that that was such a thing.
No, it's definitely a stigma.
Wow.
Because they think you're just laying there getting cut open. And, you know, I don't know if people don't necessarily realize that the recovery from a C-section is much harder than a... I don't want to say harder.
Heard that.
But it's longer. It can be... There's, like, could be more complications, I guess. But either way, it's not, you know, going to be pleasant. So, you know, it's like... No matter which way you give birth, you know, these women are still warriors.
Yeah. Gosh. Wow. I'm exhausted after listening to that.
Yeah. Let me fast forward. So then, you know, they're like, we're going to do this. I'm not sure why they considered an emergency C-section, but it technically was. It's not like the heart rate was down or anything like that, but I guess they were just like, you've been here long enough. Let's go.
It's time. Let's get this woman out. We need the bed.
Yeah. So then, you know, I took my jewelry off and they were like,
positioned my hair.
No, that was already messed up. And yeah, they wheeled me down. You get transferred to the surgical room, which is so cold. I was shaking. So then you get laid on the table and they prepare you to put the little shieldy thing up. I forget what that's called, the partition. Geez. And they kind of, I think they had like my arms were like laid out to my sides. I'm not sure if they were strapped down.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously they don't want you like
flailing,
going, grabbing for anything. And then they have, then finally, whenever they're ready, you know, they do the thing like, you know, in all the medical TV shows where it's like, okay, let's state the name, the patient's name and last name and, you know, the time and all this stuff. And
oh, geez.
So it was very official. And
wow.
Then Tim comes in.
Do you
in.
Feel like you were in your own personal episode of ER?
Well, yeah. And I'll get to that some more. So then Tim comes in and then they go right for it, you know, scalpel.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
And so, you know, we're a little bit into it and I don't really feel anything. And
that's good.
Yeah. Oh, man, I've heard horror stories about people.
This is not what is happening on this podcast.
But so, you know, we get to the part where like they get to Jackson and I believe she starts grunting and it was kind of like, Like
what, Jackson or the nurse or the doctor?
The doctor. I have this wonderful female doctor, and she was grunting, and there was a little bit of blood splashing on the on the shield, on the partition, and you know, it was kind of like, whoa, what's going on? And yeah, when your surgeon's grunting to get the baby out, she seemed a little frustrated. I don't want to say anxious, but you know, it seemed to not necessarily be going so well. So I don't think she told me what she was doing. There was no talk. We were not communicating. And I don't think you typically do. But so anyways, she got him out. He wasn't crying immediately. His Apgar, which is the it's like a number test that they do based on like how do they look, pink skin, are they what's the word, like alert and all these things. So they like, you know,
right.
It's like from 0 to 9 or something like that. And he was like, I don't know, like a 3. That's not very good.
Oh,
it took him a while. Did they suction him? Like, well, I guess you suction all the babies, but like, they didn't do anything for his breathing, did they? It just took him a little bit longer to breathe than I think is normal.
Okay.
And I remember being like, why isn't he crying? And Tim was just like, I remember him like looking up.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then he started crying and we're like, oh, okay. So then everything's cool. I guess it wasn't that cool because he ended up going to the NICU for a few hours, and I told Tim to go with him. So Tim went with Jackson to the NICU, and I was still in there by myself, like getting sewed back up. And I remember, like, that's why I remember so cold. I'm like shaking. I'm just shaking.
Oh my gosh.
You know, because I just had a baby. He went to the NICU, like making sure things are okay. Like,
yeah.
So my experiences with Jackson and Wyatt ended up being extremely different. But so then, you know, we get sewed up, and I remember asking like, how much longer? No, seriously, I ended up asking because I was like, this is like, you're just so anxious. Like,
I have somewhere to be.
I didn't get to hold him. I they did show him to me, but I mean, that's not enough. I just, you know, had
here's
him extracted.
Your baby.
Here,
bye.
This is what he looks like. You'll see him in a few hours. And so they finished with me. They actually offered if I wanted like some sort of like
refreshment.
Anti-anxiety medication. Like they
Snickers?
Stop. That's not fair. They kept asking me if I wanted medicine to calm me down. I was like, no, you know, like, no, stop asking me.
I want to see my baby.
Yeah. So then I get all fixed up. I get into my mother baby room, and then they're like, do you want lunch? I was like, no, I want my kid. Like, don't ask me about
lunch.
Like, put the tray over there. Where's my, I want to see my kid. And I think mom and dad actually ended up in the room before Tim did. Cause I guess Tim kind of probably came in with him. And then I just remember them handing him to me, and it was immediately, where's your boob? That's all that will matter for the next few months here. And, gave him my lefty, and
my lefty,
that was all she wrote.
Oh, wow. Well, geez. I mean, that's quite it's quite an experience for sure.
Well, I will say, so very quickly, they ended up telling me that because it was a struggle to get him out, I guess he was kind of like bunched up under my rib cage. They had to do, so they do like
awful.
A normal horizontal, I guess they call it transverse, incision through your stomach and your uterus. And because she was having trouble difficulty getting him out, I have a vertical incision on my uterus as well. So they call it the T incision.
Okay.
Which becomes important with Wyatt because they didn't want me going full term with Wyatt in case of what ended up happening, which was with my uterus rupturing. So we can get back to
this
that later.
Way
but
way worse.
But the T incision ended up being a big deal throughout the pregnancy because they just wanted to make sure that he wasn't going to like bust through, which ended up happening. But but yeah, they were like, you know.
Yeah,
you've
with
got
the
this incision.
With the second one, weren't you like, I feel like everybody says this, once you have the first kid, with the second kid, you're just kind of like lax and laid back, and you're like, oh, wow, yeah, I think I'm going into labor. And your first thought was, oh, I didn't get to have my hair done the last time. I have to make sure that it's ready and good looking this time.
Well, see, this is how well you know me, because that's exactly what I thought.
Right.
And so I ended up having contractions with Wyatt, and Tim was like, maybe you should go to the hospital. Because the entire pregnancy, they were like, once you get to the third trimester, if you're having real contractions, you can't go into active labor because your uterus will start contracting where that T incision is.
Oh, wow.
And then your uterus can rupture, and basically that seam will open. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I was just having... I had very painful labor with Jackson. So when I had Wyatt, it really wasn't any worse. And I feel like I have a high threshold for pain, even though Tim probably doesn't agree. But so I was just like, okay, this is what this is. I'm going to go. And I think I thought they were like maybe Braxton Hicks the night before. And I was able to fall asleep that night. So I was like, they can't be that big of a deal. Because if they were, then I wouldn't have been able to sleep. Mm. So then I woke up that morning like at 6 a.m. And it's funny because I felt like my body woke me up for this. I remember waking up and being like, okay, Jackson's not awake yet. Cool. And then I remember being in pain. And I remember actually feeling the tear. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Because it was painful. But also I remember feeling this like relief and of this pressure being let go.
Y'all, I'm feeling ill right now. That sounds atrocious. I mean, atrocious doesn't even like cover it.
Yeah, I just remember feeling like opened up. I felt opened up somehow. Like I felt like there was more space, like something happened. And I remember I couldn't get out of the bed by myself. Like Tim had to pull me up. Like I was in that much pain. It was very painful. And I know now looking back, because when they say that, you know your uterus ruptured because you always have some sort of level of pain even through the contractions. So like when you have contractions, they go up and they down and they finally will dissipate to the point where you're not really in pain a whole lot.
Oh.
But with this, it was always a certain level of pain, but it still, you know, obviously with the contractions got worse and then it got better, but there was still this level of pain that existed. Mm-hmm. So then I remember I went downstairs. Oh, I took a shower. Like, I can't believe I did all of these things in this much pain.
And Tim thought I was crazy. Ruptured.
And Tim was actually very sweet. He was like, do you want me to wash your hair for you? Do you want me to help you? And I was like, no, oh I can gosh. Do this myself. So I washed my hair. I took a shower and I was like, man, I am going to have nice hair for this. I blew dry my hair and straightened it.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't straighten it to, you know, the best of my ability, but I wanted to look good literally whether it killed me or not.
Wow.
And so I'm like, just get Jackson ready for school and get him there. And Tim's like, oh, you want me to take him to school? And I'm like, yes, go. He's like, should you even be alone right now? And I was like, just go. And I was like, by the time you get back from dropping him off, I will be ready to get in the car. And that's what ended up happening. You know, it's always painful driving to the hospital when you're having contractions. I'm like, can you just go a little, like, I know where this pothole is. Please, like, avoid. Don't make the right, go through town. Like, you know which way you want to go. It's right. The smoothest ride. And then he dropped me off. We walk up to labor and delivery. And I remember getting up to like the nurse's station. And I remember like stopping because I was in so much pain. And I felt like everyone was just staring at me and thought I was being super dramatic. And then like we go in, they like assess me. They put the fetal heart monitor on, which even touching my stomach, it was so painful.
Oh my gosh.
And she couldn't find the contractions or something. And I was just like the way she was like really irritated me. And she's like, I'm not saying they're not there. I'm just saying I can't find them. I'm like, just thinking, just, you better find them. And then like the doctor came in and, you know, I guess with all of my symptoms and stuff, she probably realized like, oh yeah, we're going to take care of this now. Because I remember Tim being like we knew it was happening.
Did you mention to anybody that you felt a tear?
No, because I didn't know what that was at the moment.
Okay.
And so then the doctor assessed me and she was like, yeah, okay, we're gonna go ahead with this. And Tim was like, so like how long do you think, when's this gonna happen? She goes, we're gonna do this like now. And so because you know they don't want to let you know like how serious this could possibly have been,
right?
And
they don't want to freak you out.
But then, you know, when you have like, what was it, like 10 people enter the room at the same time, you're and like it was like
you're like, oh, it's going down.
It's this really small room and like all these people are coming in, like they're drawing your blood, they're getting your blood pressure, the anesthesiologist is like explaining to me like signing your name away on all these papers because you're doing this now. And I just told him I don't want general anesthesia, I want to be awake for this and blah blah blah. And it was just,
I'd be like, put me to sleep.
It was just, yeah, you need to, they wheeled me into the operating room. And then I sat in the surgical room and they gave me, it's not an epidural because you know you're having a C-section, something different. I forget what they call it, but it's kind of similar. They put it in your back. And so then once that hit, it's like this immediate relief of the pain. And it was just amazing. The feeling of it just all draining away. Ugh. And so immediately too, it's amazing.
Wow.
And then you lay down and they do the thing. And it was I guess as they were like stitching me back up and they transfer me to the other table or gurney or whatever so that I can go to my room. They were like, good job, Mom, getting in here as quick as you did. Your uterus ruptured, which, you know, is really bad because your baby could have suffocated and died. I mean, they didn't say it like that, but they were like, you know.
At that point, did you regret the whole blowout and shower thing?
Yeah, it could have been really serious. They're like, if you had waited any longer, you might have had a very different situation coming out of this hospital.
At that point, did you regret?
No, I'm just kidding.
Like the shower.
Tim was very upset. I remember telling the nurse, I was like, don't tell my husband this happened. Because this was the side effect they told me we wanted to avoid the entire time, and it ended up happening. And I was like, but we were scheduled to have the surgery the next day. And I remember telling Tim, like, you need to text my supervisor and telling her I'm not coming to work. Because yes, I'm that person where I am working up the day before I have my child, because that's just how I am. And you would be the same way too.
Totally.
And so I remember having him text her. No, I can't remember. I forget what I was going to say, but, but yeah, they were, oh, do I regret it? I mean, Tim was very mad. He was very mad about that. And I understand. But I mean, here's the thing. Here I am living to tell this story and everything's fine.
That's true. They both, they're both very healthy.
Obviously, if I knew something was wrong, then I wouldn't have done that. All I'm saying, I was pretty strong to make it through all that pain and still blow down my hair.
Yeah.
But considering my history with my hair, are you really that surprised?
Oh, me? No.
Exactly.
Not one bit.
The tears on Christmas morning, every Christmas.
Oh my gosh, there was a Christmas. Does anybody remember that hair device that twirled? It was like a big round brush. Revo, that's right. I remember she just wanted every new hair product that was on the market, and she opened it up. She was so excited, in tears of joy, opening this gift.
It was the first real product that ever worked for me.
Well, no, it didn't work at first.
Oh, it didn't?
Do you remember going up into your room, closing your door, turning this thing on, and you were hysterically crying because the Revo tangled all of your hair, and you were like, I'm not coming down for dinner because my hair looks awful because Revo doesn't work.
Remember that part. I just remember it was a very great product because I ended up taking on several family vacations, and every time we went through the airport security, people looked at it like, what in the world did you let your daughter put in her suitcase? Because it looked like something I am not going to mention on this family friendly podcast, but let's just say it was very large. The handle was large and thick. The head of a round brush also looks similar shape to some of these devices that are on the market these days.
I don't even know what to say anymore about this. All right. So,
but after we had Wyatt, when we had Wyatt, even in the operating room, I got to feed him. And I got to hold him immediately, which was wonderful. And it was cute. And he was sucking on my my chin. They were like, do you want to breastfeed him now?
I want to say something else.
No, I did. They were like, do you want to feed him now? Like the second.
So you're the opposite happened with very him. Opposite. Like you were just like, I don't want lunch. I want my kid. And then now you're like, here's my kid. And you're like, what?
Well, no, I was happy about it. But then they were like, do you want to feed him now? I was like, man, I'm having surgery right now. Like, can I get a minute? Like, before I like, but then I felt like that was very selfish. And literally like 2 minutes later, I was like, okay, let's do it. Like, he's obviously hungry. He was sucking on my neck.
Wow. Okay. So. Okay. So fast forward a little bit. Was there ever any point during like the newborn phase of either one, probably mostly the first one, first Jackson, that you were like up at 3 a.m. he was crying or like you had no sleep, and you was there ever any thought of what did we do? What have we done?
Jackson was a very regimented child even from the very beginning. Like he was, you knew within 2 hours he was ready to eat. Like, so I knew, like, you have to take that into consideration. He was just eat, sleep, poop, literally every 2 hours. But then like, so it was different because we had Jackson in like a, whatever you put the babies in.
bassinet.
Yeah, bassinet. Sorry, I forgot the word.
Leave it to the childless one to remember the.
Yeah, we always put him in the bassinet when I was finished feeding him. But with Wyatt, we ended up kind of putting him in the bed with us. We used a bed-friendly bassinet type. They make that kind of thing. Oh. That we had this thing. I would call it a contraption, but that sounds really wrong. But they had this thing that you can put in between, you know, you and your partner in mm-hmm. the bed. And that's what I used with Wyatt. So really, it was awesome because you would just like feed him and then I would just like roll him over and he would go to sleep and he would be right next to me. So I think that helped him fall asleep too. With Jackson, I would always physically get up and put him back in the bassinet, and just that act alone would make it difficult for him to fall back asleep.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, once they, after like, you know, 2 months, they start hopefully sleeping at longer stretches, and but then they wake up and you never know when that's gonna be, and you're like, man, I just, and with Jackson it was different because he was hungry all the time and I had trouble keeping up my milk supply with him, and he cluster fed, so like I was sore all the time. I mean, if we wanted to go into this whole breastfeeding segment,
I remember visiting at some point, and I was like, "Oh my gosh!"
Like he literally sucked the life out of me.
Yeah,
I mean, bleeding nipples, everything.
Oh my
mess.
Gosh.
I had what's it called when your boob gets really hard? You get clogged ducts. I had to take a Percocet for that. It was one of the most painful things ever.
I've heard that that's like. Horrible.
Your boob gets rock hard.
Oh, wow.
And you have to like unclog it. And so Tim actually came up. He was the one that came up with the solution to this.
Oh, no. Do I want to know what this is?
You can use gravity to help, and you just like push it out, or like you use like warm compresses and you just massage. And
Oh, my gosh.
It was rough. And you can use your breast pump to get it out. But yeah. And if you don't, you know, pump every so often, you get clogged ducts, you know, your boobs will tell you when it's time. You'll get the tingly feelings. But anyways, Jackson was just difficult because he was always so hungry. And after like 3.5 months, I had to start supplementing with him, which makes you feel like a failure on top of everything else. So, but yeah, I remember being like, this kid keeps crying. What are we going to do? And then like, it's your first kid. So you're like, oh my gosh, if I don't soothe him, is he going to grow up to be like a mass murderer? You know what I mean?
If I don't soothe him, is he
like you're thinking like
mass murderer?
If I don't appropriately address all of his needs as a child, as a baby, every single time, is he going to grow up to be this like serial killer? You know what I mean? Because like the kids that like, you know, are neglected and don't get that kind of attention from their parents, like they have studies about these things. But anyways, but yeah, and so with the second one, you know that they're going to cry. You're not always going to know exactly the reason after you've fed and changed them and whatnot. And you kind of just let them cry. I did that a lot with Wyatt, and we still did it, and he's been fine. And the thing is like they get used to you constantly picking them up. So they get on that routine and they just want your attention. They want to be held by you. So then they cry. And then to break that cycle, you have to let them cry at some point. You know, of course you don't really do that before like 6 months of age, but Wyatt, when we moved here, Wyatt would wake up once every night at like midnight, and we would get him and bring him down and give him a little snack, a little something to drink. And he would hang out for like 30 minutes and I would take him back upstairs and he'd be fine. But then it became an every night thing. And you would think like, cause once you go from waking up several times a night to only having to do it once a night, it's a huge difference and you feel well rested. And so what's one time a night, right? But then after the course of several weeks, you're like, man, I want to sleep through the night now. Like,
and it's these times where you're like, I don't know about this.
And you feel bad, but with your second kid, you're kind of like, I know this is what it is. And then when I talked to the pediatrician, she's like, you know what you need to do, right? And I was like, yeah. She goes, then just do it.
What?
That sounds really scary, but no, she meant, you know, you have to let them cry it out. Don't pick them up. There's several things you can do without taking them downstairs and making them think that they're going to get something to eat. Like that's also the bad,
right,
you know, routine to get them on too. Okay. So we just had to break it. You know, I would lessen the time that I brought him down here for, didn't always give him something to drink or eat. And I would just put him back upstairs and he would scream bloody murder. And thank God Jackson is a wonderful sleeper. He was always pretty good, but he's out. He doesn't hear it. And I always thought that was going to be a problem, but no, thank God. Because if they were both up, I think Wyatt would have been sleeping through the night a lot sooner. I would have been like, nope, not doing this anymore.
Jeez.
Because you have a lot more patience when you're only dealing with one kid than both.
Yeah. Okay. I could see that. All right. So moving a little bit further away from the actual topic of having kids, how about moving to the topic of not having kids? What do you think about the childless life? Like, what are your thoughts on the childless life? Like, what are your thoughts on our lifestyle, or if you guys would have chosen not to have kids?
I totally respect it. I do. At times I envy you, of course. But then at times I'm also, I feel a little sad for you because, you know, when you get older, you know, who's going to be there to help you and take care of you?
Well, I mean,
because so I'm not going to be the one.
I think, yeah. No, I don't.
Just kidding.
I definitely never kind of even thought about that. Even though you have kids, I mean, circumstances happen. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be there for you. So what if you, what if you didn't cater to all of your child's needs and he did grow up to be a mass murderer and he was in jail and then he's not there for you when you're dying?
Right. I mean, you still love them though.
Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is just because you have kids doesn't mean that you're going to not die alone.
Right. I didn't have kids just so that I would have someone holding my hand on my deathbed. But like, I mean, as you get older, like I would like to see my kids grow up. Actually, you know, some of this is like, it was kind of like a challenge. I also wanted to experience this. Like, if you're going to live this life, to me, I personally wanted to experience, you know, all that life has to offer in a sense.
Okay.
And
okay.
For me, that was having kids. I felt as though I'm a woman. I have the capability of having a child and I'd like to experience that.
All right.
And, you know, hopefully I'm doing a good enough job so that I want to see my kids be successful. I want to see them be a good civilian and be nice and respectful and go on to do great things. And if they, for some reason, don't, you know, at least I think
there's
tried
a better chance
best.
With Wyatt than Jackson. I'm just kidding. Well, not really.
They're just, you know, different.
Oh, no, this has been very insightful. I am really grateful that we took this show on the road and we got to talk to you and the peanut gallery back there with about these topics and these thoughts. So I think here we're just going to kind of wrap it up for the show. And Kenneth, would you like to add something?
Yeah, I'll just say that I don't know from the guy's standpoint. It would have been nice if the peanut gallery would have jumped in there a little bit, because it was funny as Jessica, whatever we're calling her today, was answering
butthead was answering
some questions. I was, Tim and I were in another section of the room here, and it was funny just watching facial expressions and, you know, things like that. So it was cool. So it'd be funny. I think at some point maybe we could do this with
the male perspective.
Yeah, the male perspective, and not just the female perspective, but
I agree about that. I think that would be definitely worth it.
We need more microphones. First off, that would be.
We need more microphones. We need a better mixer that can handle more, like outputs or mics or whatever you call it. Kind of new with this.
Yeah, we'll get it all figured out. But yeah, it was fun to see the growing up and the maturity of Jackson in particular, from, you know, a few years ago to now. Like, Jesse put Wyatt to bed earlier. And when they said they just got back from Marshall's, they just ran off to Marshall's. And Jackson and I hung out, and we wrestled WWE style on the on the living room floor. And, you know, so it's been cool to see. I mean, we are 4 hours away, so it's been cool to see the maturity, you know, kind of go. To see it progress, because, you know, there's a time period in between when we see him, but you know, so it's cool.
I would like to offer a space for Tim if he has anything to say before we actually wrap this up. He doesn't do media.
But he would like to plug the restaurant he works at in Long Neck, Delaware.
Put the phones on. All right, we're going to do a little second welcome here to my bro-in-law, Mr. Timothy. I won't call you Butthead because you're not actually my blood relative. Unfortunately, she is. Say hello.
Sup.
Sup. We'll throw in a little bit of the male perspective here quickly. We'll before we wrap this up. What are your thoughts on the childless life versus the child life?
I miss the childless life. And the single life, if we're being honest.
Oh my gosh.
No, I mean, it's you know, you think back to, you know, when you you're in your 20s and you're going out, you're doing like all these things and being able to go on vacation, and it's awesome. But you get to a point where you have kids and
it just
kind of changes your perspective on things. It's, you know, watching them grow, watching them develop. It's a different experience.
I saw a thing on TikTok recently that somebody asked the question, how is life in your 30s different from life in your 20s if you don't have kids? And the answer was, your 30s are exactly like your 20s if you don't have kids, with more money.
That's exactly what was on my mind right there.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Tim, for your input. And thanks for joining us. And to Jesse, Jessica, Butthead.
Warden.
Warden.
Thanks for having us.
All right, y'all. We are Kenny and Nell, and this has been Just the Two of Us. Stay tuned for next month's episode, where we will have another guest or two. As always, we're not really sure who that is yet, but we promise that it'll be another interesting one. But it's going to be hard to top this one. Again, thanks for listening. God bless.
Panda.
Panda.